Mayor Brown orders a review of all policies to fight discrimination. Meanwhile, UNF President John Delaney endorses his opponent, Lenny Curry. And Florida's fight over health care funding could go into overtime. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect, always live on the radio. And now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Meanwhile, don't miss it because just ahead, we've got all the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, the Women to Women Tour comes to Amelia Island, plus singer Renee Marie. All of that ahead. But first this morning, and that means it's Friday and time for our weekly media roundtable here today, Fred Matthews, who blogs at The Examiner. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
Great to have you. Larry Hannon of the Florida Times Union.
Always good to be here.
A.G. Gankarski of Folio Weekly and Florida Politics.
Hi, Melissa.
And Stacey Spanos is here from Channel 4. Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you all with us. And there's lots of news to discuss, but first we want to begin with all the twists and turns this week in the city's mayor's race. UNF President and former Mayor John Delaney stepped into the fray in an unusual move for him, endorsing GOP candidate Lenny Curry. More on that in a moment. Also this week, Mayor Alvin Brown announced he's ordering a review of laws to prevent discrimination in the city of Jacksonville. Brown says he's ordered the city's Office of General Counsel to conduct the review in order to guarantee discrimination doesn't exist, and if so, to take action to prevent it. The mayor stopped by WJCT about an hour ago to talk about this order. Take a listen. So yesterday, you issued an order looking at a review of federal, state, and local policies to ensure that there's no discrimination in Jacksonville. Can you tell us a little bit more about that decision?
Yeah, you know, I've always said that I'm against any form of discrimination. And so I've directed the Office of General Counsel to look at federal, state, and local laws to determine what anti-discrimination legal measures currently exist. So with this information, you know, the new city council will have the information it needs to consider any anti-discrimination issues at hand. And so this is important because I believe that we need to ensure there's no discrimination in Jacksonville, and we're a city everyone wants to live in.
If the review finds evidence of discrimination, as some activist groups have alleged, would you perhaps issue an executive order banning all forms of discrimination?
Well, the all forms of discrimination, that's why we're doing a study to make sure that it's a study that will review all forms of discrimination at the federal, state, and local level and have that information ready so that council can have a comprehensive review and make a determination on what course of action they need to take.
Just a few weeks out from the runoff election, how do you see your stance on this issue affecting voter turnout and the outcome of the race?
Well, you know, I think it's all about making sure this is the right thing to do. You know, I've heard from you. I've heard from the citizens of our great city. I've heard from council members. And so I wanted to make sure as mayor to take a leadership role on this issue and have general counsel do a review of all the policies right now, federal, state, and local, to ensure that we know what's out there.
Thank you, Mayor Brown.
Thank you.
It's 549-2937 to join the discussion. Fred Matthews, let's begin with you. Your reaction to the mayor's comments.
There's nothing like a study, a task force, a panel just before election time to say that I'm thinking about doing what I think you might want me to do if I do this way. It looks like that sign that's over there at Avenue B in Moncrief right now, where there's a big new improvement of Avenue B drainage project that has finally appeared on the north side, and whose name is on the big sign that doesn't look like a city sign. But it's a good idea. It's an almost a maybe, but it's not quite what we want, is it?
LGBT activist Larry Hannon would probably call this half a loaf. What do you think?
I mean, I've talked to several people who voted for Bill Bishop, who are liberal. They this is the mayor basically saying to those people, I might be able to get you what you want if you reelect me. Lenny Curry will almost certainly not get you what you want. there is still a significant amount of frustration and disappointment among the Bishop voters in Alvin Brown. That's why they, many of them Democrats, went and voted for a liberal Republican instead. But, you know, I think a lot of them don't want to vote for Curry. They're looking for a reason to vote for Brown, and Brown is trying to give them that reason.
Stacey Spanos, will this give Mayor Brown the votes he needs? And does this put any onus on Lenny Curry to take a stronger position on this issue?
You know, I don't really think so. I don't think it puts any onus on Lenny Curry to take a position on it. And I noticed the great question you asked him, how do you think this is going to affect the outcome of the race right now? And he didn't really answer that question, did he? I don't believe he did.
A.G. Gankarski.
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep in mind what actually happened here. He did not mention LGBT once in any part of this presentation, not in the, you know, not in the video announcement yesterday, not in the interview excerpt today. There have been studies. The JCCI did a study in 2009 that was very comprehensive. That was during the Peyton administration that he seems to have ignored. He does not promise any action on this. He's not going to take a leadership role, according to this. He's going to leave it to council to sort it out. Lenny Curry yesterday was put over by, or sorry, Wednesday was put over by John Delaney. Delaney said he would at least listen to people on this issue, which is more than Mayor Brown seems to have done.
But the mayor, let me just jump in. The mayor said just now on the air here, I've listened to your listeners. I've listened to city council. I've listened to the public. I've listened to activists. I'm trying to show leadership. The direct quote.
It took 4 years to get an email to the Office of General Counsel. I don't know how people who are activists in this issue see this as real leadership. It seems like electioneering because they look at the polls and they're trying to move their base back home. You know, really, I think there's an argument that's a cynical ploy.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Larry.
And a lot of people who supported Brown in the second round of the previous election will tell you that they think he promised to do, to get a human rights ordinance done, and that he forgot about it as soon as he got elected. And I think a lot of them see what happened yesterday and think, well, if we reelect him, the exact same thing's going to happen. He's going to forget this, or when the general counsel comes back, it's just going to be put on a shelf and never done. You know, he has a problem with his liberal base, and he's had that problem ever since he did nothing to get the human rights ordinance passed, or maybe even fought against it, as many people think he did behind the scenes.
Delaney mentioned that. Delaney said that he promised evangelicals they would veto it. He promised the gays they would work for it. He split the difference. He's the Pontius Pilate of this issue.
Let's talk about Lenny Curry, though, because his comments on this issue have been equally as vague. Fred Matthews, let's talk about Lenny Curry's position on this.
Well, Lenny Curry is hampered by the fact that his party won't support this at all. I mean, that's the first hampering he has, at least on Curry, on Brown's side. His party will support. But mayor is a bit slow dragging with it. The other issue is simply this. The council didn't pass it. If the council had passed it, it would have been something for the mayor to sign or not. That didn't happen here, so the mayor was able to escape it. And that's the key here. The council's got to pass. The mayor's got to go. Now, true, the mayor has to push this bill, which Brown didn't do the first time around. But again, Curry's problem is that his own party is not in support of this thing for throater support of any HRO promotion. And since Curry is pushing party conservative lines and principles, he can't be for this thing.
Well, then how can either one of both of these men are saying they will govern for the whole city in an era when 6 in 10 Americans now support same-sex marriage, gay marriage is legal in Florida, every major city in the country has this type of protection codified in its language, Jacksonville, the only city left out. Do both of these men being risk as being labeled out of step with the mainstream by not taking a stronger stand?
They may be out of step with the mainstream, but we don't know yet if they're out of the mainstream of Jacksonville. Lenny Curry, quite frankly, needs to expand his base in the runoff. He needs to get Republican conservatives to the polls in the second round who didn't vote in the first. If he comes out in favor of the HRO, that's going to be very difficult to do. Alvin Brown's problem is if he suddenly declares himself in love with an HRO, he looks like a complete flip-flopper. Mm-hmm. And there's elements of his support which don't want this either.
Stacey.
Well, I remember going to school at the University of Florida back in 1990 to 1994, and I remember when the Gainesville City Council was taking up this very issue. Should we implement a human rights ordinance? Gainesville was talking about this issue how many years ago? And Jacksonville, and I believe they have since passed a human rights ordinance. Jacksonville is talking about this how many years later now? Why is Jacksonville lagging behind in something that it seems like many people in the city, according to that JCCI study, want and approve
of? And the business community as well, AG.
Right, and that's something that John Delaney has represented very well since he's been out of office. And when Delaney talked about Curry actually being willing to listen to all sides in the issue, is basically saying that if Delaney would provide the political cover they tried to provide Mayor Brown 3 years ago to move on this issue, to say, well, we need it for business, to mollify the church types. And yeah, I mean, it is a triangulation issue for Curry because, you know, there's a big subset of the Republican Party that doesn't want it. Your First Baptist type, your West Side Baptist types, your Tea Party types.
And you have the same split on the Democratic side.
Yeah. Yes, but it's less so. On the Democratic side, it's less so. It's just that the issue, again, is whether or not you're going to get the mayor to say, yes, I'll push the bill. He can propose it. But again, you've got to get 10, 11 members on the council to pass it. And right now, with this council we have, they've shown they're not going to pass it. Maybe with the new council, with younger blood involved, they may be willing to introduce it and pass it than what we've had. I mean, we've had a classic split on the council between Republicans who were not going to support this mayor, and he gave them opportunities not to support him on it. And this bill just shines a light on all of Jacksonville's moral.
Let's also remember that we have a real split in the Republican Party right now. We saw that yesterday with Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal's op-ed in the New York Times. He was blasting the business conservatives, saying you should stand with the social conservatives. That's a real serious split right now, and Lenny Curry is trying to bridge the difference, but it's very difficult.
It's a hard needle to thread.
Yeah,
AG.
And this is the thing. With that vote 3 years ago, it was not a party line vote. Reggie Brown voted against the HRO. Kim Daniels voted against the HRO. I believe there might have been another Democrat or two, so it wasn't a straight party line decision. Johnny Gaffney voted against the HRO, claiming he didn't know what he was voting for. Mm. And that's the reality of it.
So given that reality, why would you continue to put why would you put an issue on who's going to be mayor when the bill has to go through those folks first? Kim Daniels could probably
because
return.
17% of Duval voted for Bill Bishop. Mm-hmm. Larry.
Yeah. The Bishop vote is going to decide this race. And I think on most issues, they're more in step with Alvin Brown than Lenny Curry. But they're having a big problem getting over the fact that Brown won't support this. And I think Curry's best chance is to try to get people voting for him who didn't vote in the first round and hope the Bishop voters stay home because they don't want to vote for either of them. That's probably his path to victory.
But correct me if I'm wrong. For none of the major candidates to endorse this policy, it's got to be the death knell of topics, of policies. Correct?
I don't think so.
Well, no. It's not because whether we like it or not, Jacksonville is a conservative city.
They must. I'm saying. They must believe that they can't touch it, or they will not be voted into office.
They have been told by the people who support them that they can't touch it, which is why they haven't been touching it. Now the mayor is throwing an olive branch out here to the Bishop folks. There's been discussions. This didn't just happen. There's been discussions about doing this, and that's what this is about. Bishops vote and say, "Look, at least give me a chance to get in, and we'll support the bill." But it first has to come to him.
And I would differ with Fred only a little bit in pointing out AG's commentary on this over the last year or so, that with each new corporate headquarters that comes to this city, Jacksonville becomes a little less right and a little more center-right. Your thoughts?
Here's the reality. The Bishop voters are breaking slightly already toward Curry, 39-36, in a recent poll I reported on this week from a business group. Make of that what you will. And, you know, you got to look at it the way it is. You know, it's been 4 years of Alvin Brown. This is the movement on it. The Curry people have counter-programmed it, saying that it is electioneering. And, you know, maybe the activist groups will come out and say, we endorse Alvin Brown. But, you know, for people paying attention to this issue, they're not going to see a significant evolution. People are saying, well, you know, it's a walk toward progress. Well, I'll say it's a really slow walk toward progress. It's not taking a real position. And, you know, Alvin Brown has talked to people across Jacksonville. He could have mentioned the LGBTs in his, you know, commentary. He's looking at the comments on the WJXT Facebook page. And, you know, half the people commenting thought it was about discrimination against African Americans.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. So many people don't even really understand what this is about, right, in terms of the group that feels they are still open to legalize discrimination.
Right. But remember, Alvin Brown also needs to get a high African-American turnout to get elected. So, you know, it may very well be that he needs to get his own base out, and this helps him in that way, too. This is not just about LGBT issues. Yeah. It's also about getting the African-American vote out, because if he has a high African-American turnout and the white people on the West Side don't come in droves, then the mayor probably gets reelected.
549-2937. Mark is on the South Side. Hi, Mark. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Good morning. I would just like to point out that I think the gay community will see right through the mayor's task force. I'm pretty sure we know that the task force is going to come back and say that there is no de jure discrimination in the city of Jacksonville. And then he's going to be able to stand up later and say, look, I put this task force out there. They came back and said, there's no discrimination. We don't need an HRO. And I also want to point out that Bill Bishop was the first Republican that I've ever voted for in my entire life. And it's strictly because of this reason.
Who will you vote for in May then?
I really don't know. I can't see myself voting for Lane Curry, but I mean, it's really going to be difficult to go vote for the mayor when he basically tells the gay community every day, you don't matter.
That's Mark on the South Side. Mark, thanks for the call. We'll go ahead, Larry.
And Mark sums up the way thousands of Bishop voters feel right now. They don't feel like either of these candidates is someone they can support, and I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of them just either don't vote or they vote for everything else but don't vote in the mayor's race.
And Fred Matthews.
Well, that would be a good thing, wouldn't it, for the two candidates who can't get their votes. If you don't vote, you don't vote. And if that 17% or half of that 17% doesn't vote, then guess who gets the majority of the other votes that are voting? Again, it's a matter of math. Curry has got to get more than he had in the March 24th poll election. Brown has to hold what he has. He's going to hold 7, 8, 9, and 10, some parts of the West Side, and those votes he got in Arlington. He's going to hold those precincts. So what Curry's got to do is overcome that. The Bishop vote makes a difference. So if they sit home, sit it out in Avondale and around Riverside in those areas, they're helping Brown, whether they want to admit it or not.
Lots of tweets. Josh tweets the show. I agree with your panel. The HRO is a death knell issue in the race. Where will LGBT voters turn? Joel, I voted for Bishop for mayor. I'm not happy with the leftovers. Julie, the problem is one of the fundamentalist religion. Where are the responsible clergy who should be advocating for the HRO?
And there are clergy out there who are advocating for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Human Rights Campaign, as you reported, Melissa, is basically talking to some black churches, trying to get them to, you know, at least support this initiative that the mayor has made. But, you know, there was talk for months about an executive order. There was talk for months about the mayor actually coming forth and supporting, you know, renewed HRO. That came from the activist community. Obviously, that has not happened. Obviously, it's not going to happen before the election. So I think, you know, once the euphoria over, you know, yet another, look into discrimination happens, people can say, well, where's the substance? Where's the beef?
Let's talk a little bit more about the mayor's race and mention the other big story of the week. Former mayor and UNF president John Delaney, in a rare move, endorsed Lenny Curry in the race. Let's listen to Delaney.
My second reason to go public with this race is this. We have a candidate in Lenny Curry who brings a freshness, a sunniness, business acumen, and a perspective that this city needs. I have absolute confidence that we have a leader in Lenny.
Larry Hannon.
It really was surprising because he's not really that personally close to Curry. He was much
And he never endorses anybody.
Audrey Moran and Rick Mullaney ran in the previous mayor's race. He's close to both of them, especially Rick Mullaney. Mullaney may be his best friend. He didn't endorse either of them. But the one thing about Lenny Curry is he's the former Republican Party chair of Florida. He has a lot of contacts, and he is calling in all of those contacts. He raised millions of dollars for other Republicans, and I think he's calling in every chit he has.
And that's a major chit,
yeah.
Fred.
Well, it's interesting, and it is a good play, but it still looks like there's just another closing of the ranks of the Republican Party around the Republican nominee. On the other side of the bench, you've got Ed Holt, who you certainly would not think would have endorsed. He's a Northside congressman from a very conservative district that got a bit, that has a huge business deal up there. That that new River City Town Center is a big deal for the north side of Jacksonville. Ed Holt would certainly not have appeared to be endorsing the mayor, but he did, along with Stephen Joost. Both, was it Joost or Joost?
Joost. Okay. And Ray Holt. Ray Holt.
I mean, you just would not have presumed that these two guys would have endorsed the mayor on this point. So it balances itself out, but it doesn't really, Delaney's endorsement does not really tip the scales. It just looks like more crowding around of the Republican nominee.
But as you said, AG, at this point, these candidates are going to go for every ounce of momentum and juice they can.
You know, Holt and Joost compared to Delaney, it's like trading two pennies for a silver dollar. Their endorsements are effectively meaningless. They're something that can be trumpeted as, well, I've got Republican support. But, you know, John Delaney's a guy you can put on the mailers, you can put in commercials if he'll actually sit for one. You can actually message with him. You can go to town with him. You can't do anything with a Joost endorsement.
It's you could.
That's not a game changer.
Well, that would be true if it were for the fact that Delaney had been campaigning for something other than something he's not getting from his own party. It's very clear that the Republicans are surrounding around their nominee. Show me some strong Democrats who are surrounding, who are coming up with Curry. Show me a Warren Jones. Show me a Nat Glover with him. And then we have something to discuss.
You're saying Joost is a strong Republican?
What I'm saying to you is that he crossed the party line. He violated his own declaration that he signed that says he will not endorse a Democrat.
For example, as you reported, when Jimmy Holderfield endorsed Ken Jefferson for sheriff, that was an example of someone crossing a party line and breaking their loyalty oath. Stacey.
One of the things that Delaney brought up in his news conference when he endorsed Lenny Curry was he talked about what he perceived to be the financial mismanagement of city government. And I know there have been many reports about that over the past 4 years of the Brown administration. And I think a lot of people are going to take that into consideration, coupled with the fact that Delaney has not endorsed anybody over the past 12 years.
Larry.
I think the Delaney endorsement is a big get for Curry, but I think we're too late for it to mean that much. I think most people who vote have made up their minds. You know, possibly some Bishop voters are still agonizing over it. Maybe Delaney will help them, but I don't think this is going to swing thousands of voters one way or the other just because it's so late in the game.
549-2937. Linda's in Mandarin. Hi, Linda.
Hi. All the prosecutors and whatever. My thing I wanted to call about was Mayor Delaney endorsement and part of being part of UNF, which is a public institution. I know he still has free speech rights, but part of the reason why I saw us lobby to have him as president of the university was, you know, because of his skill set as a former mayor. But I was very concerned that he doesn't take off his mantle being president of UNF when he makes an endorsement for candidate for mayor. If that person doesn't win, we still have to work with whoever's elected. I don't necessarily question his judgment. I just don't think it was wise, no matter how much pressure the former Republican chair put on him. He should have, you know, stayed neutral, because he's a president of a public university in our community, and I just don't think that looks good for me as an alum. Thank you.
That's Linda in Mandarin. AG.
I mean, I can see where she's coming from with it, but Delaney's not endorsing as UNF president. He's endorsing in his capacity as a former mayor. That's what he said at the press conferences, what he said in the interviews. So you've got to draw the distinction there. Delaney has stepped out of his UNF president role to take a political action, a calculated risk, but it's one that will be forgotten as soon as this election is over.
Here's a tweet from a listener. Does Delaney's statement say anything about his own future political ambitions, say the governor's mansion?
I don't think he has any future political
ambitions. I don't think he does either.
I think it's too late for him. I think, you know, he went for the senator when before Charlie Crist appointed George Lemieux to that vacant senator seat. He was one of the people who wanted it. But I don't think, you know, he's so entrenched in Jacksonville, I don't think he's going anywhere. I could always be wrong.
No, I think you're right. Stacey.
Yeah, from the the small discussions I've had with him over the years, not that he would be totally forthcoming with me, but he has always indicated he was not going to be seeking higher office.
He tells me everything now. I'm just kidding. Fred Matthews.
Yeah, the same thing. I've known John for years, and his wife and everybody is happy here in Atlantic Beach where they were when I first met him. And he's not looking at anything. But things can change.
Yes.
Things could change.
But he's been out of office 12 years now. That's a long time to be out of the game and get back in.
And the job could change. But that's what job security does for you also. You can step out and make endorsements like this.
Or you get a little bored and then you want to change.
Also, he's probably too liberal for a Republican Party right
let
now.
Let's talk about that. Because as you've written, AG, John Delaney is tacitly giving Lenny Curry political cover among moderate Republicans. Lenny Curry's going to bring the conservative base. He needs moderate Republicans.
Right. I mean, that's the play right now. Every poll that we've seen since the first election has shown a margin of error split, you know, 3 to 4 points. And, you know, that's really the play here. If you can get the moderates, get the undecideds. Right now, the no party affiliation voters are breaking very strongly toward Alvin Brown. We'll see what this endorsement and the aftermath and the messaging does, because the Brown campaign has had a remarkably bad counter messaging on this. You know, they did a statement, you know, talking about 36,000 new jobs, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, the same old memes they've been using in every press release ever. So, you know, they don't know how to effectively counter message this, and that's a problem.
You know what, though? We hear these messages every day because we cover it. The average voter, any campaign will pound a message 10,000 times. The average voter may just hear it once or twice.
I was talking to someone a week or so ago who told me that someone volunteering for Alvin Brown has knocked on her door 3 times now, encouraging her to go out and vote. Nothing from Curry's people. You know, Brown had a very good ground game 4 years ago. It looks like he has that again. That could be a big deal.
Let's talk about the Election Day ground game for a minute, and then we'll go back to the phones. Larry's right. The Brown ground game 4 years ago was really something to behold. Can he do it again? Fred and Stacey.
Well, I mean, that's what they are. I mean, when you look at the campaign signs that are out, you don't see Alvin Brown's name. You see the word early. And everybody at first they said, who's early? Who's running? Well, it means early voting. Mm-hmm. And if they're back out again all over the place, they're early all over the place, and the folks are on the ground. It is going to make a big difference, because if nobody else comes to your door, you begin to say, well, I guess nobody else is running. Yeah. And because a lot of folks are not going to be focusing on this thing. They'll be focused on a jazz festival and everything else, just like they were focusing on One Spark. They see all of that, and then they say, oh, there's an election. Yeah. I must vote for early.
And this is not a race that's excited a lot of people. Yeah. Let's face it. It's really, if you can get your base out, you're probably going to win.
It's excited a little bit more than, well, I guess we could say city council races, that's for sure. And what did we get, a 30% turnout for this past election? Yeah. And they're hoping for a little bit more. So we'll see how it turns out when, you know, the rubber hits the road. But we have more registered Democrats in Duval County than we have Republicans. So it will be up to the Brown campaign to motivate them. And we'll see. You know, it's always easier to motivate when you're a fresh candidate as opposed to somebody who has been in office for 4 years.
Yeah. You know, and the reality about the ground game for Brown is that a lot of it is bought and paid for. They bring in canvassers from D.C. They use block by block for that. They pay people $55 a day to do volunteer door-to-door work on the north side. And this is something the Curry operation is not doing. Could it make a difference? Very possibly.
But that's the new reality of politics, though, A.G.
Outside.
Both sides are using out-of-state advisors, the whole deal. Why do you think Rick Perry, Romney, and those guys are here? They're not here just on good graces. That's the reality of the campaigns we're running, and Jacksonville is in the big leagues. What happens on the beachfront here in Jacksonville will echo out throughout the state.
It is seen as a bellwether for 2016 in Florida. This mayor's race is in some quarters seen as a proxy for who's going to take Florida in 2016, right?
I mean, I don't think it's going to matter that much when it comes to 2016, but if I'm Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush, or Marco Rubio, if the candidate for my party wins, I feel a little better about Jacksonville.
Eric's on the south side. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I'm here. Good morning, Melissa.
Go ahead, Eric.
I'm can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
I'm here. Good morning. Well, why would President Delaney want to go anywhere? He's making more money than the President of the United States. He's making more than Governor Rick Scott. I don't know what's so funny, Melissa. I mean, it's $10,000 a week. It's all about money. He's doubled his income in the last 13 years out there at UNF. His predecessor was making more than the President of the United States. So Presidente Delaney's going to stay right out there with the slash fines. Thank you.
Eric, you're absolutely right. AG.
John Delaney has earned his money and then some. He's transformed UNF, made it a bigger university, given it more of a national footprint. These are things that were not the case before John Delaney came in. So if John Delaney's making $10,000 a week, you know, he's earning it in terms of visibility for the institution, in terms of funding, in terms of all these other things. So that's something to consider.
But politics isn't just about money. It's about power. And anyone who's held power as a mayor has a certain desire to get up to a higher office where they'll have even more power, even if the salary is less.
See, here's the thing, though. Delaney told me in 2008 that a politician to run effectively has to have fire in the belly. John Delaney does not have fire in the belly to campaign
and
to
if,
shake hands.
And if you can pull down half a mil a year and wield power behind the scenes, mm-hmm. well, that's a pretty sweet deal.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of power and running for office, we want to talk for a minute about the local sheriff's race. Another rash of shootings this week in the city. This is Sheriff candidate Ken Jefferson spent the night in the high crime neighborhood of Grant Park to bring attention to the issues and talk about how he'd address them. Jefferson and Mike Williams are in a tight race to lead the JSO. Fred Matthews, police-involved shootings are a big issue in this race, among other issues. This is the other one that we're watching very closely.
It's going to be an interesting race, but it is still coming down to the question of whether you want a police officer or you want a police officer. Both of these guys are police officers. So it just comes down to the question of whether you're going to accept the resume of one over the resume of the other. And they started to touting their resume. I've been in the SWAT team. I've ran this. I've ran Homeland Security. I'm the chosen one of the present sheriff. Or do you want this guy who's just been a patrolman and a spokesman? Mm-hmm. That's what you got to decide for.
Stacey, mm-hmm. you've worked with Ken Jefferson. He, of course, was Channel 4's crime analyst for years, giving him high name recognition.
Very high name recognition. I wonder how much that played a role in his election. And please, I'm just speaking as, you know, I'm not weighing in or making any judgments by saying that. He's a great guy. Mike Williams, I've never met. He seems like a great guy as well. They both have pretty good resumes. Mike seems to have a little bit more in terms of running departments. But I noticed the difference in terms of those numbers, those poll numbers that night. And it seems like Kent had many more votes. And of course, when you've had FaceTime in front of a camera for many, many years, people know you. People know your name. Mm-hmm. And I think that definitely helped. And, you know, Melissa and I were talking ahead of time here. At what point do we need right now in our future here in Jacksonville somebody who knows how to run a department? And sometimes we need somebody who may be a spokesperson for the city, a figurehead for the city, maybe to quell any tension that we may have here.
And that's what this choice, I think you're right, comes down to.
Yeah, and really the polls are tightening up with these guys. The last poll had Williams down by 4 points. That reduces the 15-point spread from the first election. And, you know, the case that Williams is making is one of competence. I've done this, been the right-hand man of John Rutherford on this issue. And Jefferson doesn't have that. Jefferson's got some really great photo ops, some really great sound bites. I was there at Grand Park when he spent the night. I did a walkthrough in the neighborhood. Great connection with the people. But, you know, when people go to the polls and vote, they're saying, you know, who's the person who can run this the best? Who's the man? And, you know, Mike Williams, you know, is making the case that Ken Jefferson can't in terms of resume.
Larry.
Yeah, but Jefferson offers a break from the current sheriff. And even though Rutherford is popular, there's still some people who look at this and think, well, maybe it's time for a change. You know, Jefferson's challenge is he needs to get white voters. He doesn't have to get a lot of white voters, but, you know, if Holderfield can deliver the people who voted for him to Jefferson, Jefferson probably wins the race, but it's questionable whether that can happen or not. You know, we've often seen in past elections it breaks down on a black-white line, And Williams seems to be consolidating the white vote. Jefferson has the black vote. And, you know, if Jefferson can get 20 to 25% of the white vote, he wins. If he doesn't, he loses.
Fred, do you agree?
Well, that's why the top of the ticket is so important, because if the Republican majority can turn out, they're certainly going to vote for Mike Williams. On the other end of the spectrum, Mike has got to do some campaigning to show that he's going to be a sheriff for everyone there, because the majority of his problems are in the black community. And so he's got to show that. So far, he's not really done too much, if anything, to show that he's interested, remotely interested in doing that, other than saying to you, I'm in charge of Homeland Security, I'm in charge of SWAT team, I'm in charge of this, the very things that the folks in those communities don't want to hear.
Well, you know, I'm sure he's very interested in those things. Has he done a great job of communicating them? I don't know. I am on Ken Jefferson's email distribution list. I am not on Mike Williams' email distribution list. So I see every one of Ken's emails. I am doing this. This is his response to this shooting. This is his response to that particular shooting. And I remember when I got here, Nat Glover was a sheriff. And I remember him doing those walks through the neighborhoods. Were they substantial or were they substantive? I don't know. Did they change anything? I don't know. But I do know that they sparked something within people, and they showed the people, hey, I'm out here. I care about you. So along that vein, I think that's what Jefferson is doing. And I think that it's kind of what gives people hope. I remember, you know, Barack Obama got elected on the hope and change mantra.
If walkthroughs are a substitute for policy, why don't we just elect Donald Foy as sheriff and be done with
it? I love Donald Foy.
Well, the problem,
exactly, that's my point.
But
he's not going to be sheriff.
And I understand that. I understand it. But politics still comes down to first, who do you like?
Absolutely. And you know what I like? What's coming up right now? Our weekly look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week. And luckily, never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Now, only in Florida do random men try to direct traffic at a busy intersection while also relieving themselves in public. Yes, 35-year-old Terrence Rouse was arrested in Fern Park after Seminole County Sheriff's deputies say he was at an intersection telling cars which way to go, but also urinating at the same time.
Just marking his territory.
Exactly.
Animal behavior.
Only in Florida do guys named Elvis break down doors with a pickaxe after a family fight over stolen beer.
They do that in Tennessee.
In Putnam County, deputies say Elvis Rhodes took two beers from a cooler from his son's home after an argument over the theft. An enraged Elvis grabbed a pickaxe and tried to break into the house after his kids locked themselves inside.
Grief. Elvis, a lot of love.
Elvis has a history of violence, we're told. And finally, my favorite story of the week. Only in Florida are people stupid enough to kiss their venomous snakes. Did you see this one? It was all over Facebook. 18-year-old Austin Hatfield is in critical condition in Tampa after being bitten in the face by a cottonmouth he was keeping as a pet. The daredevil Hatfield was even keeping track of how many times he successfully smooched his snake. But it turns out his 13th attempt was the unlucky one.
He used tongue.
You know, if you when you kiss a poisonous snake, you're not just kissing that poisonous snake, you're kissing every other person.
That's
snake.
That's very wise, Larry.
Larry Hannon, Fred Matthews, Stacey Spanos, A.G. Gankarski. Have a great weekend, guys.
Thank you.
Right now, fund your favorites. Here's how.
353-9528. And we have a $500 challenge to small businesses from the Moss Fire Grill. They gave us, invested $500 into this, their public radio station. They encourage all other small businesses to do the same. We are at $63,500. We've got a little ways to go, only $17,000 to go at the end of this day. So it is your turn now. 10 callers in this break would get us a lot closer. I'm David Luckin, host of the Elector Lounge, here with Morning Edition anchor Michelle Corum.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I always like listening to the Friday News Roundtable because we get to get a historical perspective of what's going on in the community. So many people in that studio in there, I'm watching them change over right now. But the roundtable we just listened to on this program, such knowledgeable people, and they've got a lot of history in the community. That's why I love First Coast Connect and love listening to the program, as do you. And that's why we're hoping you will make a pledge of support, because First Coast Connect is a jewel in this community as far as finding out what's going on. It's unique. It's hosted so well. And it's a WJCT unique production, but it does cost funds to keep it going Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock every morning. It's there for you. And we're asking for you to be here now for that program and many others that you love here on WJCT, whether it is news or music programming that we provide or entertainment as well. We've got a lot here. Fund Your Favorites, we're calling it. And this is the last day you can get in on helping us reach our final goal. If you haven't made a pledge of support, you can go to the phone now and start. Get started. We're hoping you would do something like a sustaining pledge monthly, as low as $5 or higher if you would like. And we also hope that if you would like to make a $120 pledge, you would enjoy the HD radio that we're going to send you around this time, new to this pledge drive.
It's that simple. We need your support now at 353-9528. All these great programs are made possible by listeners just like you. It does cost us $500,000 a year for the programming, and we hope you will take the time now to fund your favorite. As Michelle said, pick a show that you really like that you can't do without. It might be Fresh Air. It might be Diane Rehm. It might be Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the weekends, or Performance Today, beautiful classical music every night from 7 to 9. We do a lot here, and we hope you appreciate it. We know you do because you're listening, and we look at the ratings. The ratings are very good, so please give us a call now. And when you pledge at 353-9528, put it on your social media. Put it on Facebook, our phone number. Put it on Twitter.
Spread
put it on
around.
Instagram.
Yeah.
Let everyone know this is our last day to keep all this great programming coming your way. It's only made possible because of people like you.
And today we're calling WJCT. Would you call today? Would you call today?
Let's hope so.
And that number.
353-9528.
Well, the first of its kind women-to-women conversations tour is making a North Florida stop this weekend up in Amelia Island. And some of the country's top female leadership will be there to inspire and engage local women to vote and to look at issues. This is a free event at the Ritz-Carlton. Tour founder Sarah Chamberlain is here now with a preview. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is very exciting. What's Women to Women all about?
Women and women, we are traveling around the country with sitting members of Congress and talking about women's issues. And believe it or not, all issues in this country are women's issues. So we try to motivate them to turn out and vote and to listen as to why it's important for them to turn out and vote.
You've got some incredible speakers, too, don't you? Can you give us a preview?
I do. I have the youngest woman ever elected to the House of Representatives. Her name is Elise Stefanik. She's 30 years old. And then I have the first woman ever elected to the Senate from West Virginia, Shelley Moore Capito. And they're going to be talking about their experiences and what they've gone through to become the first of their kind elected from their states.
And you feel strongly, don't you, that both parties need to improve their communication with women and recruit more women to leadership positions. This is part of that.
Yes, we feel very strongly about that. We are here as bipartisan to talk to women because we think the country would be better run the more women that we have sitting in powerful positions.
There's a local movement here in Jacksonville to get more women elected to local office, so this is in keeping with that. You really want people to come out to this event, a free event, a really great opportunity, and it's at the Ritz-Carlton, so you can't beat that, right?
That's right, and not only is it free, but we will feed you and give you an open bar opportunity.
And this is sort of the first of its kind event of this nature, isn't it? You put this together in a unique way.
Yes, what happened is I am the only woman in the country that runs an organization of this size. So they decided, we sat down with the board, and they thought it would be nice to travel the country to just let women know that women like myself and these elected officials exist and that we're very interested in women's issues.
So, again, this is free. This is on Amelia Island. It's this weekend. You want people to register.
Yes, we'd like you to register. Really, why I'd like you to register at MainStreetAdvocacy.com is so you can submit a question so we can actually be talking and answering the questions that you want us to answer instead of us just sitting up there talking. So again, it's MainStreetAdvocacy.com, and we'd love to see you Sunday at 5 o'clock.
Come on out to the Ritz-Carlton Sunday for the first of its kind Women to Women Conversations Tour at the Ritz-Carlton Sunday night, 5 o'clock. This is free. So don't miss it. Mark your calendar. Founder Sarah Chamberlain, I so appreciate you being in studio with us, and thank you for being here. Have a great event.
Thank you very much.
And finally, this hour, singer, actress, and writer Renee Marie performs tonight at UNF in a special tribute to the great Eartha Kitt. This rare concert comes courtesy of Riverside Fine Arts and Beaches Fine Arts. Riverside Fine Arts' own Stacey Aubrey is here now with a preview, and this is exciting.
It is exciting. And speaking of women, Renee Marie actually is a very powerful singer, actress, author. She actually was in a turbulent marriage, and her husband said, "You pick me or music." And at age 42, she said, "I'm picking music."
Uh-huh.
So this just fits perfectly because Renee's going to be here. She fell in love with the music of Eartha Kitt, and Eartha Kitt's family supports this project. And her latest CD, which was just recently nominated for the 2014 Best Jazz Album, is all music of Eartha Kitt. And Renee is going to be joining us for a special benefit concert that we're doing with Beaches Fine Arts. The money that we raise from this concert will help both of our outreach programs, Beaches and Riverside Fine Arts, a lot in the community.
This is the first tribute album celebrating Eartha Kitt. We have a little bit of a listen.
Yeah, great.
Let's listen.
Fantastic.
I want to be evil. I want to scratch some bats. I want to be wicked. I want to tell lies. I want to be mean and blacken some eyes. I want to wake up in the morning with that dark brown taste. I want to see some dissipation in my face. I want to be evil. I want to be mad.
Oh, that's terrific. And this event tonight at UNF's Lazara supports Beaches Fine Arts and Riverside Fine Arts.
Yes. And just so you know, we actually are moving it to the Robinson Theater.
Robinson Theater.
So it's a much more intimate event. And tickets are still available. General admission. The tickets are $30. And we're actually also offering a VIP reception prior to the concert. Those tickets are $50. It is an open bar. Food is provided by Moxie. And the alcohol is provided by Roadhouse Liquors. So
oh,
it should be fun.
Gosh.
And Eartha Kitt. I was going to say Eartha Kitt's going to be there. Renee Marie's going to be there.
She'll be there in spirit, right?
Correct. Renee's going to be there to schmooze and meet everyone before the concert.
And
well.
Didn't Eartha Kitt's daughter give her blessing to Renee? Marie's tribute.
She did. She's a big supporter of this project.
Oh, man. This is so exciting. Kudos to Riverside Fine Arts and Beaches Fine Arts, bringing just the most cutting-edge artists and performers to town on a regular basis.
Thank you.
Seriously. It is so exciting. And I think we can play a little bit more of Renee Marie to close out the show. Again, that's tonight at UNF's Robinson Theater.
Yes.
You can buy tickets at the door or you can get them online right now. This is a special, rare concert event. Renee Marie and the Eartha Kitt Tribute Show. Go on out and enjoy some incredible music. Go to the VIP reception, too. And thanks so much for listening to First Coast Connect all week. I'm Melissa Ross. We got a little more music for you. And we're also going to ask you to give us a call. Have a great weekend.
.353-9528 is the number to call to support First Coast Connect. It is your connection to this community, to the political leaders, to the arts and entertainment of this community, to anything that matters in your life. They're on First Coast Connect every day. And the best part about First Coast Connect, you get to participate. 353-9528. That is a number to call, or 1-800-722-9528, or anytime at all at wjct.org. And we want to thank everyone who's called so far. And I'm joined here by Ray, our man online.
Hello.
Ray, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you, David?
We're trying to get this thing wrapped up today. We're up over 63,000 and only 17,000 to go. So
That's
we are
right.
getting very, very close. And if we could get your call now, we would be there. We're talking Fund Your Favorites.
That's right. Whatever your favorite show is on 89.9, tell us what it is so that we can keep it on the air. And
it's as simple as that.
Do that with your money. Give us a call, make a contribution, and become a supporter or become an ongoing sustainer. Every month, make a contribution that helps us fund your favorite shows. You know, we've talked about this so much in this pledge drive, but it's really something that a lot of people don't realize is that the shows that we put on the air, they cost a lot of money to produce.
How much do they cost? Let's say $116,000 for Morning Edition.
That's right.
That's a huge amount. Car Talk, $17,000. Wait, don't tell me. Another 17,000, all things considered, $65,752. So yep. That would be our whole drive just once to pay for one program. And that's why it's so important that we up those numbers from the 80% of the listeners who don't support us, but they listen.
Yep.
If we could get 5% of you. We need 10 calls in this break. We need 10 calls in every break today to hit our $80,000 goal. Fund your favorite. Pick a show or a couple of shows that are worth it to you and attach a dollar amount to it. For a $120 one-time pledge, we will give you this great little portable HD radio so that you can listen to classical music 22 hours a day, plus a repeat of Fresh Air and First Coast Connect, or you can listen to our new music service, HD3.
If you want to, you know, if you just feel like listening to great music
You'd love
all
it
day long.
Because it's everyone you know from the 40s to the 70s. You're going to hear everything from Bing Crosby to David Crosby, from Tony Bennett to Melody Gardot. We've even got in some fresh music from people like Kings of Convenience and Michael Bublé.
Yeah.
Lots of fresh music. Here's a little bit of it, I think, right behind me now.
Oh, yeah, I hear it. But I'd like to get to know. Finally I found, searching all around, just was not the answer. What I thought was true looked a bit like you. I figured I might chance her. And that, of course, is Spank and our gang. I'd like to get to know you. And we'd like to get to know you, but we can't talk to you. We can't get to know you if you don't give us a call at 353-9528. And this is just a sample of what we have on the new Relax radio station. Nearly 2,000 songs in rotation, everything from Nat King Cole and Sinatra to The Rascals and Spanky and Our Gang and The Righteous Brothers and Elvis and The Beatles. Tons of Motown, lots of Aretha, all the good stuff. What you find when you turn it on, you get lost in it. Yeah, and if you're like somebody like me and you don't like to talk on the phone, you can go to our website, but only if you do it right now. If you go to our website right now, you can go there, wjct.org, and click the Support WJCT button to become a supporter. Make that one-time contribution or, you know, become a sustainer and make a contribution every month right out of your bank account. It's simple and easy to do, and this pledge we just started where you can take, it can come directly out of your bank account. And that saves us a ton of money on fees. So if you're already a sustainer, consider doing that. Switch over to Bank Draft because that will save us a bunch of money. It's like giving a bigger contribution to WJCT without even giving any more money.
That's a perfect way to do it. And we thank all of our sustainers because those folks have knocked us down from 5 weeks a year pledging with $180, $140,000 goals. Yeah. Now we're down to $80,000 goals in just 2.5 weeks at best. So we thank all of our sustainers. We ask you now to join this organization. Invest in this, your public radio station. We can't do it without you. We're a minute away from going to the news at the top of the hour, so we remind you that you are listening to WJCT 89.9 FM, Jacksonville, Florida, your community, your world, your music, and right now we're talking about your money.
That's right, and I say this all the time. If you get value out of what we do here at WJCT, the shows that we bring you at WJCT, consider giving some value back. You know, put a dollar amount on that. You know, you pay $8 for Netflix, you pay $9 for Hulu. How much is public broadcasting worth to you? How much is Morning Edition and All Things Considered? Give us that call. It's 904-353-9528. Do it right now, 904-353-9528, or go to WJCT.org, click the Support Now button, and become a supporter of public broadcasting here in Jacksonville.
353-9528. We thank everyone who's called so far. Now it's your turn. Please call us right now. 353-9528.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.